I've been to 1,200 tapas restaurants in Sevilla, so you don't have to. That's Sean, the Canadian who's lived in Sevilla for 20-some years, and who's turned herself into the leading English-speaking expert on tapas restaurants in Sevilla. I've been to 1,200 tapas restaurants, so you don't have to. And she has, and she's tried them. She knows all about them. She knows all about the tapas experience in Sevilla. She knows the restaurateurs, and she's turned that into a good living for herself and a good time for people who go on her tapas tours. Now, what does this have to do with London Walks? Well, you can take that line of hers and you could turn that into, for us here in London, I've read 500 books on London, so you don't have to. And yes, that's true in my case. David, I've been here nearly 50 years, and I've always got a book on London, usually on London history, going. So I probably read about 12 a year, times half a century. And sure, that gets you to 500 books. And that's just the books. That's not counting the countless articles, etc., etc. Now, most people don't read even one book on London history, even people who are coming to London. A London Walks guide will read a whole book, just for one choice London factoid. And it's a little bit like panning for gold. Lots and lots of siftings and winnowings, many, many pannings. Each page you read, each page you turn is a panning, if you will. And you maybe do 60 or 70 pannings. You read 60 or 70 pages, and there's nothing that grabs you. And then you turn the page, and suddenly, 60 or 70 pages of nothing, nada, zip, niente, and bingo. You turn the page, page 72, and you've got it. There's that bright speck. And then, holy Moses, it's more than a speck. It's a big, fat, gold nugget of choice London fact. And it finds its way into this or that walking tour. Something you didn't know that makes sense of something special about London. So all of this now has to do with the question, and I want to go some way toward answering the question, where do we get our information? And reading is extremely important. And this is why, for the most part, we don't hire 20-year-olds. Look, you can take a look at, say, audiobooks, and they will tell you how long it takes, how long you have to listen to get through War and Peace, for example. And it'll come to something like 39 or 43 hours. Well, if you apply that principle, I mean, most books aren't that long, but you apply that principle to a normal-sized history of London, it's going to be 25, 30 hours, something like that. And a 20-year-old hasn't lived enough hours to do much reading. And we want reading in depth, but we also want it in breadth. An example, I'm currently going through a kind of World War I phase. I've sort of realized that memorials are highly invisible. People pass right by them, they don't see them. And I'm now taking time with them and starting to take a good look at them and digging further with them. And you know, they're going to be worked into the weave of a couple of my walking tours. But where's the breadth coming from? Well, you know, there's a council block in Hampstead, and it's got a memorial tablet on it. It's two buildings, probably about 60 flats. And this tablet commemorates the 50 young men from those two blocks, those two buildings, who went off to World War One, and 10 of the 50 didn't come back. They were killed. This is two buildings, 60 flats, 10 of them, and in lots and lots of cases, it's the same last name. In many cases, I mean, Rouse, for example, the memorial I'm thinking of, there's five Rouses, and a couple of those were killed. Well, you stand there with your jaw hanging open, and you think of just how devastating that must have been for those mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and friends and neighbors, etc. And so that, you know, that probably has to do with the, I mean, you're thinking about the industrialized slaughter of World War One. If you go around this country and you look at war memorials, and, you know, every village has got a war memorial, every town has. And the list on the left, on the left-hand side will be extremely long. And then on the right-hand side, it's much, much, much shorter. Well, the one on the left-hand side, it's World War One, and the one on the right-hand side, it's World War Two. There were far, far fewer soldiers. British soldiers lost their lives in World War Two, and so you do get an idea of just how ghastly, how utterly devastating it was. But you know something? The in-breadth reading is extremely important. Personal story. My sister, when she was a tiny little girl, 6 years old, she lost an eye. And you know, it didn't, and it hasn't slowed her down a bit. But of course, when I got older, you know, I was aware about, you know, that second eye providing depth perception. And I was aware that for her to get her driver's license was probably more difficult than for a person with two eyes, etc. So perspective, perspective, perspective. And it's from that breadth of reading that you get some perspective. So while I'm standing there looking at that memorial and seeing those five surnames, Rouse, and thinking, my God, 10 young men from these 60 flats over that 36-month period, or whatever it is. But then you think of Belarus in World War II, something like 30% of the population, 3 million killed, more than any other country. You know, the idea really was to exterminate the Belarusians, and you know, move, Hitler was going to move German-speaking people into those lands, and that does get it into perspective. So that's why we want breadth of reading as well as depth. Now, so where do we get the information from? Well, yeah, the books are extremely important, but also, of course, magazines and newspapers and radio programs and television. Yes, the internet. Even sometimes film. I mean, I think what happens when you get hooked, the way I am hooked, for example, the way every London Walks guide is hooked, it's as if there's a part of your brain that's like a piece of Velcro, and that will snatch any tasty, interesting London factoid that happens to float by. It'll just grab hold of it. And that is on, that's operating, you know, 16, 17 hours a day. All the time you're conscious. And it sometimes is going on subconsciously. But yeah, the Velcro is there, and it will pick off any London factoids, any tasty, good, choice London factoids, anecdotes, whatever, that happen to be going by. So that's the reading, but you also get information, and really good information, from locals. Often, for my walks, I'll get there 35, 40 minutes, and I just walk around, I keep my eyes open, I ask questions. I can be really forward. The other day I was in Kensington and I drifted over to my favorite little cul-de-sac in Kensington, and I happened to, a local was coming out, and yeah, I stopped him and I asked him a question. I was fully prepared to be brushed off, but he turned out to be terribly nice, and I found out lots of interesting things about those houses. I found out how big they are, and I knew that the underground was running under there somewhere, but I didn't know exactly where. And he said, yeah, if you're coming down the street from Holland Street, it's on the right-hand side. So the house is over on the other side across from mine, he said. You know, they tremble a little bit when it, and sometimes they can hear a little bit because the tube is just underneath. So you get interesting stuff from locals. And Yeah, I'm really forward. I have knocked on doors to ask a question. Sometimes I'll spot something and I will doorstep them in a slightly more formal way. I'll write them a letter and I'll enclose a stamped self-addressed envelope. And you get just the most wonderful stuff coming back. And again, it's, look, it's London. So you're drawing on all these resources here. Not long ago, I wrote to the Maritime Museum in Greenwich. I'd overheard a guide who's not a guide telling this story about Nelson's body being brought back in a barrel of rum, and he said they tapped the admiral. They drank the rum. Well, you know, that didn't happen. It absolutely did not happen. But I wanted confirmation, and I got it from the Nelson expert at the Maritime Museum. It's full of information. His reply to me, he said, look, early in the 19th century, people knew that if you drank the fluids that had a body in it, you would get seriously ill. And he went on to say that his men adored him, and it was the body, the barrel with the body in it was under 24-hour guard, et cetera, et cetera. He said it's absolutely an old wives' tale. But that information came from an expert on Nelson at the Maritime Museum. And this is what you do. I went to the trouble of writing to them. I'm a member of the London Library, and I usually spend 1 to 2 days a week, and it's got the most fabulous collection of London books. So, that's where the information comes from. And there is, with some of us, and I'm one of those, there's some work with primary documents. Census returns, the military produces a great deal of information about the people who were in uniform, wills, et cetera, and I dig that stuff out. Again, going back to, this is a different war memorial in Hampstead, and I noticed that there were two names on it. And I really found out where those young men lived. It was Crediton Hill, actually, where Mary's parents lived for many years. And I really felt for that family. They lost two of their sons, but one of them was a twin. And I looked up his brother, who, I don't know if he was in the service, but he lived until 1947. And I went and I had a look at his the death documentation when he died in 1947. And the executor of the will was Donald, which was the name of his twin brother who was killed in World War I. So this clearly was a son of the surviving twin, who was given the name of the brother who was killed in World War I. Well, this kind of thing brings these people to life in a sense. You see them and you certainly feel for them. Somebody said, and I'm so moved by this, somebody said that we die three times. We die when we die. We die when we're buried. And finally, we die the last time our name is mentioned. And I've decided, for the time being anyway, this will probably go on for a year or two, maybe longer, that some of those names on those tablets, I'm going to keep those men alive, because I'm going to go on calling attention to their names. I'm going to be naming their names. But that's sort of where, you know, the information, a lot of it comes from. And it's not just the information. Almost, well, as important, really, is the route. When you're getting a good walking tour, you're paying for the route as well as the information. It's extremely efficient. You know, you could spend 40 years reading everything I've read about Hampstead, and you would probably be able to find out a lot of the information that I know about Hampstead or Kensington or any of the other walking tours. But you wouldn't know how to string it together efficiently. You wouldn't know the route. So that's another factor. And finally, and you know, I would have been embarrassed to say this 30 years ago, but we really are retailers. We work in retail. There is some manufacturing going on, some of this research, some of this digging, but we're not researching full-time. I mean, right now, there's any number of scientists and doctors working flat-out, working full-time, doing primary research, trying to figure out what it is about COVID and trying to find a vaccine for it. Well, that's not us as guides. We are not researching 40 hours a week. We are more like retailers, really. But if you think about it, London Walks, something like 75 guides, and you know, there's a lot of expertise. There's four lawyers. There's a doctor. There's a University College London geologist. There's our most distinguished guide, Stuart Purvis, the former editor of Independent Television News and subsequently the CEO of Independent Television News. There is all of this expertise that comes together. So we're not like a corner grocery store that just has a few lines or maybe just one line in any article. It's kind of like Harrods, if you will, but then a whole series of specialist shops, and you can go to them and you can get, you're going to get top quality advice, information from guides of this caliber. It's the kind of guiding, the kind of advice, if you see it in retail terms, that you're never, ever, ever going to get from a corner shop or from an 18-year-old who's memorized a script, in many cases, not a very good script. Okay, that's it. That's all for me, David, tonight. Thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. Ciao.